Welcome to the podcast, Soccer is Life. Axel speaking here. So this is going to be part two of Women's World Cup 2019 and just the significance of women's soccer, I guess. We're just at the back end. We finished talking about, in part one, obviously, we spoke about how Lisa and I met, how we found out about both our shared passion for the beautiful game. And then we speak about the World Cup as well, as far as, you know, group stages, players' performances so far, it seems that I've impressed, you know, quarterfinal predictions, you know, final and all that. So hope you guys enjoy that one. Right now we're going to talk about the inequalities and between men and women soccer. So that includes the financial inequalities, prize money and all of that, systemic sexism, and the equal pay issue. And then at the end we're going to close out the topic with discrimination of women within men's football. So hope you guys enjoy.
And we're back here for the second part. I wanted to highlight this story about the Jamaican national team.
Okay.
Because, you know, like listening to some of the podcasts that I listen to, I just, you know, discovered this story. I was like, oh, this is really nice. It'll be really cool to talk about it. The fact that they were defunded actually in 2014,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened before. I'm sure it's happened a million times, but that's when the story kind of like starts.
Mm-hmm.
So Sedila Marley, mm-hmm. Who's one of Bob Marley's children, she found out about this. I think she lives in Miami actually. She's leading like the label that her father left behind and all of that. So all of her brothers are and sisters are, you know, musicians
Gyms,
of some
yeah.
some
mm-hmm.
sorts. I don't know about her, if she like, I'm sure she like dipped, you know,
right.
her feet as well, even though she ended up just being like a
on the
executive
business side
or
of
like,
things,
yeah,
yeah,
level executive or whatever. But so she finds out that the team has been disbanded, you know, defunded because, you know, they're not receiving money from the federation anymore. So she just like decided to like become a benefactor of the team.
Mm-hmm.
She helped like raise a lot of money through like foundations. She put a lot of like her own money as well. And she kind of like wanted to like create a buzz around the team. So I think she and her brothers like made this song called Strike Hard. I've actually listened to it. It's
oh, okay.
really good. And you know, and it's like really like football specific,
right.
you know, Strike Hard. And obviously we know that, you know, the Jamaican teams, they're called the Reggae Boys and the Reggae Girls.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always like this, you know, like whenever you think about, when I think of Jamaica personally, I see obviously Cool Runnings,
mm-hmm.
Like as far as sports, of
right,
course.
Right.
And I see, like, I've always been interested in like what, like the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
I always watch the, you know, the 100 meters, whatever,
yeah,
like whatever track things.
Mm-hmm.
And you always like get, you know, infatuated with this, like, black, yellow,
mm-hmm.
Green, you know, jersey, like, you know, whether it's like the Usain Bolts, the female track runners,
right.
and all of that. So like it's always like a specific thing that throws me back. So obviously, like, you know, you have like this Reggae Girls like aspect to it as well. Like it's so like there's a lot to like create a buzz around
right,
here, right?
Right.
So she did that, they got a lot of money, they started playing again, I think. And this happened again in 2016. Like they got defunded again, so she, you know, she just
stepped
like doubled
in.
Her efforts,
yeah.
She got this foundation, like be a big contributor. I think it's called the Alacran Foundation or something
mm-hmm.
like that. So they apparently do like a lot of like arts philanthropy in Jamaica. So she did like a lot of fundraising again, and she found a coach as well. Like she.
Okay.
She approached this guy called Hugh Menzies.
Mm-hmm.
From what I hear, like he's a former, like corporate banking, you know, guy. Like
okay.
he just retired and, you know, decided to like follow a soccer coaching career.
Right.
A little bit like Maurizio Sarri, who's now at Juventus. What he did.
Right.
Worked in banking for a while and then just left it and said, you know what, I'll become a soccer coach.
Okay.
So he did the same thing. Apparently, he has like a really, really successful like youth soccer school or whatever
okay. mm-hmm.
In Orlando, and he decided to like join the Jamaican
mm-hmm.
team as well. So for everybody who's listening, like this is all pro bono stuff. Like
right.
nobody's getting paid for whatever. Like he's not getting paid.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I feel like it. You know, and it's the first time that they participate to the World Cup. So I felt like, you know, that was something that I really wanted to highlight.
Right, right.
And, you know, hopefully we can see a lot more of them, you know, because I think that they always bring like a different dynamic, a different aspect to the to the game, you know, like all these like countries that you don't really think of as like football countries. But you know, of course, like that's the first country. I mean, it's probably that and what, cricket or something like that. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so like you don't have like famous. I guess the famous soccer player right now, this Bayer Leverkusen guy. What's his name? Leon Bailey or something like that. Touted to go to like, you know, some of the big clubs in Europe at some point. Still really young, but you know, that's the thing. And a lot of and another thing that we have to highlight is that a lot of the players just. I mean, they were born in England and, you know, they have Jamaican descent, but they just decided to play for the English national team, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that what you're going to get in the next few years is, you know, a crop of players that are not good enough for the English team. So they might decide to go
back to their, you know, their parents' countries, grandparents' countries.
So
play for them. Yeah, that's a really, really good story.
Yeah, I really like
it. I wish all these teams that could use that kind of funding had
They could, yeah. And, you know, she's present at all the games. And,
right.
And so one thing that was really important for her was that she didn't want, I mean, because obviously she's the celebrity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she didn't want to be in the limelight. Like, she didn't want
about her.
Exactly. Like, Sidila's, you know, is doing this, blah, blah.
Right.
Because she wants them to, like, to be like a standalone team. She wants them to stand by themselves and to them be the star of the show, right? Like maybe in 5 years, you know, this episode like repeats itself again. Like, you know, maybe she's not going to be there to like help them out.
Well, I mean, the thing is that as many benefactors as you have and which are helpful, unless you have the support of your federation, there isn't...
That's it, really. Yeah,
yeah, there isn't a whole lot that you can do. Like, she bailed them out in 2014 then had to do it again in 2016.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, kudos to her for sure, because without her help these girls wouldn't be able to play. But their federations need to start supporting the women's teams,
because then when you have, I think what happens is that they're like, oh, okay, she's doing this, okay, so now we can like calmly take the money away, you know, spend it on other things or just like put it in our own pockets, and you know, we just know that she's gonna show up,
right?
Because you know, she's done this now, and you know, if maybe like this time around she says no, it's gonna like look bad on her and her family.
I mean, she can't be expected to single-handedly fund a entire football team. So it just also brings me back to the whole like, well, the teams that perform well are the ones that are going to get the money.
Yeah, makes no sense.
Or get the help or whatever. But then when you look at a team like the U.S. Women's National Team, who have overperformed for the men who are paid much less, right? That doesn't stand. They've won World Cups. They brought in more money. I wish I would have written
I think
it down.
Since the 2015 World Cup, they've made more money. I mean, that this is all the material that's in the lawsuit,
right?
So it's not always a case of the men's game brings more people to the table, and that's why they get paid more. No, so like for all these like, how do we call that, bonuses, stipends, whatever. Yeah, like if you know the payment structure needs to be altered for sure.
So
because it doesn't make sense for the U.S. for the U.S. case, for example.
So while I definitely believe in equal pay, right, because they're doing the same job. Can you imagine what teams like Jamaica or Argentina or Cameroon could do if their federations put in the type of money that the U.S. Federation is putting into the women's national team? Like, it just takes some effort, right?
Yeah.
And they're not, and for whatever reason, they're not willing to do it because they don't feel like it's as good, or they don't feel like women should be playing this sport.
That it's not making as much
It's not making as much money, but you're not putting in the money to for them to bring in the money for you.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So it's like a vicious cycle.
It's a vicious cycle, absolutely.
You know, you can't have one without the other, and one needs the other to happen before it can take off. Yeah. I mean, so, you know, at this point, we're pretty much in the, you know, like right now, we're just going to address like the enormous inequalities between the men's and the women's football game. I guess this was the elephant in the room, and, you know, another topic that we really had to address as well. Because, you know, it's not all good and rosy because, you know, some people decided to watch the World Cup this year.
Right.
Because all you have to think about is also, like, what happens next year? Like, what happens,
right,
you know, when they have to play friendlies and all that? You
right.
know? So is that momentum going to be the same and all
right.
that? So I first want to talk about the financial inequalities mm-hmm. as far as, like, prize money specifically. Because right now at the Women's World Cup, we have 24 countries.
Mm-hmm.
And the total prize money is $30 million. US dollars, I believe.
Okay.
Which the winner of the competition gets $4 million.
Right.
And I think that so all these figures have been doubled from the 2015 World Cup.
Right.
So it was even lesser then.
Right.
And for comparative purposes, in the men's World Cup last year, 32 countries took part in it, and the total prize money was $400 million.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an enormous,
right.
you know,
and
$370 million US dollar difference. And the winner of the competition got $38 million. So we know that the French team picked that up.
Right.
So that, you know, money goes to the French Federation. And obviously it's their choice of, like, as far as, like, how they reinvest it back
mm-hmm.
In their own program, whatever that they have going
right.
on.
Right.
But that's the, you know, that's a huge gap. And, you know, we see that... they doubled the prize money from the last World Cup. So you
right.
you see this as a trend, as in, like, the next World Cup in 2023,
right.
are they gonna double that? Are they gonna triple? What's the? Because I you know, just like we spoke in the beginning, I feel like the brands are really, you know, waking up and smelling like coffee right now and seeing
mm-hmm.
that, you know, because it's a money thing for them. Like,
right.
there is money to be made here as well.
Right.
Come invest early where
right.
it's actually cheaper.
Right.
Because, you know, in 10, 20 years,
and when you're
it might be expensive
to, yeah.
for you to...
And you might not even be able to get in to,
exactly.
To get any returns on that
yeah,
investment.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
You know? It's disheartening.
Mm.
Especially, and I keep bringing them up, but they're the example. They are the example.
Mm-hmm.
We have a women's team that has won two World Cups,
yeah.
has won, can't even remember how many golds in the Olympics,
mm-hmm.
Who have been consistently making their World Cups, bringing in revenue, and they're being paid, you know. Like, so for instance, in 2015, it's the women won $2 million,
mm-hmm.
right? Which the federation then took and then could distribute however they wanted to.
Yeah.
So the women didn't actually, may not have actually seen that.
Oh, yeah.
$2 million.
They might not even seen even like 20%.
Right.
Of the, yeah.
But then you have, on the flip side, you have the men's team
mm-hmm.
who's best showing in recent history at the World Cup was
yeah.
the quarterfinals in 2014. They didn't even qualify for World Cup for
yeah.
2018.
Yeah.
And the way things are looking right now, it doesn't look
they're
like they're going to
yeah.
qualify
yeah.
for the next World Cup. And
they
tell
can
me,
only it's only at the Gold Cup, you know,
right.
when they play like these islands that have like literally no professional players. That's
yeah.
that's when they really
when they do.
Yeah.
But even then, like, if I watched that game where the men lost to Trinidad,
mm-hmm.
the arrogance of all the players that went out there and played, like if it was a sure thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the bag, it's like, you guys are mediocre soccer players at best.
At best, yeah.
Right?
No, for sure. And then you have, like, the... you have Luna Bar that has stepped in, and, you know, I mean, of course we can talk about, like, yeah, it's a brand they're doing this for marketing, but, you know, somebody
whatever.
Had to do it.
Yeah, they're
and,
stepping in and they're providing.
So they stepped in and they provided, what is it, like $718,000
right.
Dollars, I think. So this will be the difference that they would contribute
right.
To make up for the difference between what the man get as a bonus and what the women get. So this will be like about... By like on average, it'll be like about $31,000 per player.
Right.
So this is what they're contributing. I mean, I think it's like shameful that, especially in a country like the U.S., where, you know, there are definitely like resources and all that.
Right.
That
they have. There's
brand,
no excuses.
Exactly. Like, has to like step in to.
Right.
You know, do this. I think it's
no. There's like no excuses
yeah.
for it, and they instead of like really sitting down and being like, okay, how do we fix this? Mm. They're digging their heels in, and they're being like, well, the men signed one collective bargaining and the women, you guys signed something else. Mm. So we have to adhere to this other one. Well, why wasn't the same collective bargaining agreement presented to the women that was presented to the men, right? Like, the reason why you have the money that you have is from the women's national team. The men are not doing... the men are garbage.
Right.
And part of the reason why the men are garbage is because of how they, how U.S. soccer is choosing to run their federation.
Yeah, and how the sports is prioritized.
Like, how it's prioritized, like how, you know, how they don't really have a farming system here in the, you know, here in the States. You know, soccer is for people who have money, right? Like, to get onto club teams, that's
the travel is like thousands of dollars
that, you know, parents are paying out of pocket. When you go to every other country, and basically they have a farm system, and they're going out and they're looking for young kids to come in and play, and they're picking up, you know, poor kids.
Oh, yeah.
Working class kids off the street and giving them an opportunity. Things are a little bit more accessible in other countries. But I digress.
Yeah.
It's just, it's frustrating to be told for years and years, well, the reason why we're not putting in money is because you're not bringing in money.
Right.
Right? Or that you're not exciting to watch because you're not winning anything. And then when you do have a women's team that's killing it, who's bringing in money, you're still the men
actually be like the face of the federation. Yeah,
like the men are, you know, the frustrating thing, I think it was it last Women's World Cup, Abby Wambach was I think it was Abby Wambach, I don't know,
her last,
like,
World
leading
Cup.
Goal scorer or whatever, and they were like leading women's goal scorer. And it was like, why? No, like, if it wasn't Abby Wambach, it was something. But it was like, no, what do you mean? She is the leading U.S. scorer.
Yeah.
Like
Marta.
Landon Donovan. I think they were talking about Landon Donovan being the, like, when you put it in order, he came in fifth.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's not even close.
Like,
yeah.
Get out of here. Like, stop. Stop. It's like you feed us a bunch of bullshit over here. And then when we live up to those bullshit expectations, and you find a whole nother reason not to pay women equally.
The same,
even though if you went by the whole model that you laid out, the men should be paid should be paid less. And they're not even asking for the men to be paid less. They're just asking to be paid equally to what the men
who are
basically losers are being paid. Like, I'm sorry.
Let's talk about this lawsuit, because, I mean, this is a great time to, like, just swing in it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, so on March 8th, the U.S. women's national team, I guess the players, you know, because, you know, the team cannot sue the federation as a, you know, because it's the same entity.
Right.
So the individual players, I think 28 of them actually put their name on the, stamped their name on the lawsuit, and they sued the U.S. Soccer Federation, claiming purposeful gender discrimination, right? All the things that we spoke about. So it's we have to speak about the timing as well, because they did this in, like, a risky manner, as
right
in, like,
before.
It was 3 months before the World Cup. But to me, it's like one of those things, like, it can be really, really good, or it can be really bad, and I think it's going to be the former. Because them, you know, making this announcement now, and, you know, of course, they could win the they could win the World Cup, you know, as a whole. So I feel like when they have that as a pressure, I mean, not as a pressure, but, like, just as a, you know, added fuel, like, hey, you know, like, we're here battling in court, like, you know, and, you know, now we're battling on the field, like, we have to win this. So I feel like, you know, unfortunately, the more they win, the more they're, you know, displayed or whatever, showcased for their, you know, football prowess, like, it puts, you know, the narrative changes, right? Like, it will be more positive for them. Obviously, if they were, like, just dog shit and did not even qualify, like, it'll be, it won't be as talked about, and it won't make as big an impact as as it would, you know, as wrong as those things are. So, yeah, I mean, the 28 players that describe institutionalized gender discrimination that has existed for years. And they say that, you know, like it doesn't really affect their paychecks, but also where they play, how often they play,
right?
How they train, the medical treatment, the coaching they receive, and even like the when they travel to games,
right?
So I mean, once again, like I said, this is just like this is the U.S. women's
specific,
team. Like,
yeah,
this is a team that, you know, relatively speaking, I mean, they probably have like the best conditions,
right?
Around, you know, as far as women teams and all that, and this is still going on, you know. So imagine countries like freaking Afghanistan,
right.
Iran, or
right.
you know, I don't know, Liberia,
right.
Congo,
yeah, yeah,
you know, Argentina, whatever, right? And it's like, yeah, like if they have it this bad, imagine for the people who can't even. I mean, they're just like nobodies, right?
Right?
So yeah, that's.
But it's important that it starts, or that. It's important for a team like the U.S. Women's National Team to use their privilege to do something like this.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because while the other women, the other women that play for these teams in the countries that you mentioned are, you know, are just battling even to play, they don't necessarily have the platform to bring that, you know, to bring that change. So even though they are suing their own federation.
Mm.
It's like a trickle down effect, right? So if they were to win this, and their time to announce and their time to file was very strategic.
Mm.
You know, 3 months before the Women's World Cup, we're, you know, talking, we're gearing up, you know, it's gonna be in the public. They're gonna have that public support.
Mm-hmm.
And so it keeps things fresh in people's minds.
Oh yeah.
And they specifically did it on International Women's Day.
Mm-hmm. March 8th, yeah. That's a good one. Yeah, I didn't realize that, actually.
And, you know, and they are making a statement,
mm.
right? It's a statement like, we need to do better for our team.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because they are the winning team
mm-hmm.
or that they generate more revenue.
Yeah. Just because that's
fact
the way
that
things should be.
That's
yeah.
the way it should be.
Yeah.
That's the way... normal, you know, things should be. You're paying your not just for the women's national team, but for their coaches.
Mm.
Their coaches, Pia Sun, I can never say her name, Sunhager and Jill Ellis.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Pia, or was it Jill?
Jill is the main one.
Jill is now.
Yeah.
But these women have won so many games,
like
and
World
title,
Cups
and
yeah,
that, yeah, and like they're being paid on average about $300,000.
Mm.
On the flip side of that, Jurgen Klinsmann, which they dismissed,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was a terrible idea because he's the one that got them as far as
right.
as they did the men's national team, he made $3.27 million even after he was dismissed. And then Bruce Arena, who's a terrible coach, who didn't even qualify, still made $1.27 million.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
So, yeah, that one doesn't make sense for me because I don't know who this Bruce Arena guy is. I know that he was, like, involved in...
He used to
was
be...
Was it LA Galaxy
he used,
or something
so he
like
used
that?
To coach the women,
yeah.
Bruce Arena.
Yeah.
And then he was a coach for LA Galaxy.
Yeah.
And then they hired him to coach the men
mm-hmm.
after they got rid of Klinsmann.
Yeah.
And... They basically got rid of Klinsmann because they felt like he should have gone further
yeah.
than he did. And because he kept insisting that you need to change your recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
You need to change your academy.
Your farming system.
Yeah,
is
your
not
academy
working out.
System
yeah.
is not working.
The college system.
They
and
did
all
it.
That.
Yeah, they
yeah.
didn't want. They didn't like that. They let him go.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, they gave him all of that money.
Yeah.
And you have coaches that have
comparable
won a World Cup
mm.
on their CV, and you're paying that woman $300,000.
Yeah. So there's a case for me to be made there, like as far as Bruce Arena and her, like they should definitely be on par,
right?
But I see how Jurgen Klinsmann, as a, you know, a legendary soccer player and also like, you know, manage the not manager, I think it was the assistant, or manager before Joachim Löw, and Joachim Löw was his assistant. I don't recall, but I mean, I see the case for him making what he was making, because that's just like his price in the market.
I don't have a problem with him making what he was
making. But then her making 300 when this other bozo is making 1.27 million,
that's
too far apart.
It doesn't make sense. And just, not just financially, but just, there's just disparities in the way that they treat. The 2015 Women's World Cup was played on turf. Can you imagine? Can you imagine the men playing that? Like, there's no way. The injuries that you can get playing
much more susceptible,
right, on turf. And it was never like a question to try to find grass field, you know.
Yeah, I remember, I mean, the, a lot of players, like actually like the Drogbas, the Thierry Henry and all that, they echoed the women's words, you know, when they were like, guys, like as athletes, like, you know, number one priority is like to stay healthy.
Right.
And like no player, no male player would play in these conditions.
Right.
Like at a World Cup.
Right.
So I feel like, you know, the same should apply for the women.
For the women, absolutely.
I mean, just to close on this lawsuit, we should also point out that all, like, their male counterparts like support them.
Yes.
And so I feel like more could be done. Like, if you really want to make a statement, you could be like, all right, we'll actually take our money and we will, like, you know, give it to them, like, whatever difference. Right. Like, you know, I feel like you can't just say, I support, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I understand, like, you guys have bills to pay as well and all that. And, like, the soccer players in the U.S. are not, like, the most bling bling, like, you know, the most like financially roared and all
right,
that,
right?
As if we're talking about like the Neymars, the Messis, or the Ronaldos of the world, of course. So I understand that part, that, you know, a lot of the players like are not making crazy money, but, you know,
well, they could do something like what the NBA's Players Association has done,
the Players Association,
which is they basically fund like part of the women's season so that the women can continue to play. You know, I
I feel like they should, they could, there's more something they could do.
There's something
and it doesn't have, even have to be on a financial level. It can be like, we won't play, or we won't do XYZ,
or just
until
speaking up,
blah,
to
blah,
give
blah.
More support. Would be amazing. It'd be amazing to see to see that.
Now I want to talk about the Egerberg. So we're still we're still on the equal pay topic here. So this is the latest female Ballon d'Or winner. She plays for Lyon. I mean, she's this like silky player. She was the best player at the she won the Champions League with Lyon last month. She was the best player as well. So this is like the, she's 23 years old, so fairly young. And she has like 60 caps for Norway already, with like 30 some goal. And this is her, like, the last time she played was in 2017.
Right.
She's 23 years old, and she has like all these caps and all these goals already, which is crazy. So at first, like around 2017, she refused to play because, you know, she what was she that she was requesting? That, you know, there was like a huge inequality and lack of respect for women's sport in her country. This is Norway. I mean, you know, it's like a Scandinavian country. Like, they're usually pretty advanced and like progressive on like all social issues. And so she said, I will stop playing. And so this is like a powerful figure using, you know, her position as a leverage, right? Like, it's like, all right, I'm the face of the country, period. Like, if I don't play, you guys have nothing to, like, show for.
Right.
So she did that, and it was really powerful, and it made some change, because 2 years, not 2 years after, in 2017, Norway became, the Norway Soccer Federation reached an agreement with Norway's Players Association for equal pay agreement with Norway's players. So they were the first and still the only FA right now. As far as like an equal pay structure, and when we say equal pay, guys, for all of you who might be confused, like, here we're talking about the bonuses that players of the national team receive when they are on duty for the national team. We're not talking about like their salary that they make at their respective clubs. That's a different topic as well, and there's a lot to say over there as well. But so yeah, Norway became a pioneer in a sense in December 2017 when they reached this deal. But apparently she's still refusing to play. I'm not sure what she wants more, but, you know, I respect her decision to to protest, and it's definitely powerful and impactful because a lot was written about it. The fact that the best player is not at the World Cup.
Right.
Like, imagine a World Cup without Messi or Ronaldo, right? Like, it's the same impact that it's having. So I'm not sure what are her latest, you know, questions or whatever, whatever things that she wants to see in place. But I know that Norway was really trying to, like, get her to commit to playing this World Cup. And they were unsuccessful, as you guys can see. And I think that I heard the coach saying that, you know, right now our priority is just to, like, try to have her after the World Cup. You know, we respect her decision, blah, blah, blah. We're here to listen to her, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, and this is what the Federation's soccer director, who's a woman, actually, was also, like, appointed around that time. Lise Klaveness, I think, is her name. Obviously, the pronunciation is not the best. But yeah, so she splits her time equally between the men's and the women's game. And yeah, I mean, she was, like, pretty happy with the developments that her country and her FA, her federation specifically made. She said she was not sure what. I mean, of course, more always needs to happen, but she was not particularly sure of, like, her. Her protest, like, what was the end goal? Because she says that, you know, there's a lot of changes to be made still, but I feel like we're progressing. We're, like, at a really good pace right now. And, you know, Norway's probably, like, really, really up there as far as, like, the money that they contribute in women's soccer.
Well, that's really good to see. And I know that change isn't going to happen overnight.
Yeah, it's not overnight.
But it's good to see a federation willing to sit down and speak to and be like, okay, what can we do? And here's what we've done so far, and, like, make changes.
Yeah.
It's good to see that.
She is using her position to be like, first of all, this is a sacrifice that's, like, hard to make. Cause
I grew up
playing soccer. Like, I was never in a club or anything like you, like, in a, you know, it's properly structured. It was always, like, in the streets and all that. But playing at the World Cup, scoring at the World Cup, like, that's crazy.
I mean, that's everybody's dream that plays.
I don't know if she was there before, but, you know, in your career, you can probably make, like, 4 or 5 max if you're lucky. So, like, to just give up one when you're not even sure if your country's going to qualify for the next ones, like, that's always already too difficult. So, you know, you just have to, like, applaud and respect her decision to keep protesting. She might come back after the World Cup, you know, who knows? So we'll see about we'll see what happens in that development for sure. Let's talk about we're still in inequalities right now. Let's talk about the systemic sexism, because, you know, women have historically been excluded from football, which has hampered their role, their ability, to, you know, acquire skills, resources. Or just to be, like, something that's culturally accepted, so I know that before the Second World War, women's soccer was, like, flourishing, actually. I saw these videos that were reporting about it, and I understand that in 1920, like, almost 53,000 people attended a game at Goodison Park. So this is the stadium where Everton plays. They raised a lot of money for charity as well, like £10 million at the time, which was, groundbreaking. And then so between 1921 and 1971, like, they were just banned from the FA. So this was, like, an official ban, like, women cannot play soccer, blah, blah, blah. And I mean, although only England, like, did it officially, like, a lot of the ban just extended to, like, other countries, officially or unofficially. The same happened in, you know, Brazil, Germany, Netherlands, for example, and obviously other countries would just have, like, other
society
barriers.
So
and we know that the ban was lifted, like, in the late 60s, early 70s, and obviously the first World Cup was held in Italy, but that was, like, an unofficial World Cup. It was, like, in 1971, I believe, and so they had to wait 20 years to have an official World Cup, which was in China, I believe, in 91. And yeah, so that's just, like, 70 years of a war for history, that could have been history, but now it's just, like, this gap, where, like, like, at a period when women's game was just, like, non-existent, period. And then now, obviously, we're in 2019, a couple decades later, a lot of change has been made, but you know, still lacking enormously. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I feel like while we've made great strides, you know, and it's becoming more popular and more accepted, and it's not uncommon to see a woman footballer these days, we still have like so far to go.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know, and while I can take comfort and solace in that we have come a long way, and I definitely take my hat off to the women that came before us, because of them, I'm able to play soccer and enjoy soccer and you know, and it not really be just so unheard of. But I still have conversations with men and they're skeptical about whether or not I know what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah, for
right?
sure.
They just assume that I couldn't possibly. And I'm like, but the difference between you and me is that I've actually played a structured game, right?
Like
this
what
is
I'm
not
about.
Just I've not just played footy in the park on Sundays
this is not
with
like
all
down the
pub, well, you know, right? Like
I'm out here,
right? doing my thing, you know. Like I was born into this life. I played. Like I understand the game, and I think until we get to a point where it is more socially acceptable, not just to see like other women playing, but having conversations with women about football and like people respecting the opinions of, you know, of these women, like until we can get there, like we still got a long way to go.
Oh yeah, long way. I mean, like when I was researching about this, I saw like let's you know, if we just take if we just focus on a region here, like South America, like all these like South American countries,
right,
were like the women's national team were just like non-existent, you know, just like Jamaica, they were just like defunded,
right?
Like it got to a point that it was so bad that like games were not even being scheduled, like the team was not being staffed, like this is just a situation of like women like not even having, like you're actually losing money to play football, right? And a lot of these people, they said, look, like the only thing that keeps people playing is the fact that obviously they love the game and all that, but it's like, you know, being able to like wear the Argentina jersey, being able to wear the Chile or
to
the Brazil jersey,
for their
like that's emotional, right? Like that's an emotional thing. So like if this emotional aspect of it like was not here, I would have hanged my boots like, oh wow.
Right.
You know, so it's that kind of situation.
Right.
In Chile, for example, I mean the females, they created a players union in 2016 that actually integrated in the men's player union. And so this helped them like gain momentum and reorganize their team because they were neglected for so long. And the Copa America was actually held in Chile that year. So these are just like pressures that the federation received and, you know, I guess caved in. And, you know, we have the same thing in Argentina where like, you know, they went on strike. They were receiving like crazy, ridiculous stipends or just like not paid, period. Like $10 a day per diem, like ridiculous things. Like an average kid in the U.S. who's like, let's say 10 years old, like has that for lunch or whatever,
right?
When they go outside the house. Oh, so these are ridiculous things. You know, playing with the like crazy, like pitches on it, like in crazy conditions. No proper changing rooms or anything like that. They have managers who like also manage like female youth teams, so like they can't even be like 100% involved. I mean, it's just like
the list goes
things.
On and on.
The list goes on and on. Yeah.
With South America and but the really awesome thing about that is the collective that they have between Chile, Argentina, and Brazil. They are moving and working together as a unit to get changes done for their FA. And because of their collective, you know, agreement to work together, it has forced their FAs to make some changes. So I think that's amazing. On one hand, and then on the other hand, I'm like, it shouldn't have to be.
It shouldn't have to be that
be
way.
All of that, right? But a part of the issue, I believe, with like these countries and a lot of countries mm-hmm. is that there is no accounting for the money in the Federation. Mm-hmm. The money is given to them and they don't have to explain like how they have spent it or how they allocated it. And I think that's a problem.
These are already notoriously corrupted countries. So imagine on top of that, not even like having an accounting system on, you know, on top of that, like CONMEBOL, like a huge federation like that.
But even FIFA doesn't have an accounting system in place to to do this
for them,
to be like, hey, we need an accounting. Like, we gave you XYZ amount of money. What did you do with it?
Yeah.
Right?
There's no accounting.
Right. There's
quote
no.
Quote, unquote, because, I mean, there is a real... There are spreadsheets somewhere.
Somewhere.
Yeah, of course. And, I mean, the other thing that we have to, like, speak about, which is also really important, is the fact that it's the professionalism of it, like the professional aspect of it. Because what happens for a lot of these women is that they're not even recognized, like it's not a profession.
Right.
So whenever they're let go by teams for weird reasons,
right.
they can't even claim like unemployment checks or anything like that because they didn't have a contract in the first place.
Right, right.
So for a lot of these women, it's a battle to even be recognized as a professional footballer and to have a contract.
Right.
This is a huge problem in... I've heard about this problem like a while ago because, you know, I also like try to interest myself in like African soccer and like how the farming system is working there, you know. Players will always like leave home and like, you know, have like dreams of going to Europe and literally like their whole like family savings like into this project.
Right.
In the end, just to get like stiffed by this like fake agent and like, you know, taking all the money and all that. So, you know, a lot of players, you know, end up going to like Bulgaria, Ukraine, like all these countries that are just, you know, not where you think you want to go.
Right.
But that's just like where the path brings you. With all the hurdles and all that. So the big aspect of this is that, yeah, they're not professional players. So whenever they're let go, they can just, you know, the same happened to this player called Macarena Sanchez.
Mm-hmm.
She's not at the World Cup right now. She's an Argentinian player.
Okay.
But she was the first female footballer from Latin America to stand up for her rights using legal action.
Okay.
So she actually took her club and Argentinian FA to court for unfair working conditions, lack of recognition as a professional player, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, obviously she didn't have a contract, a football contract. So she, like, when she's in court, she doesn't have much ground.
Right.
If that makes sense, which is insane. Yeah. So yeah, it's no compensation for loss of employment or anything like that.
Right.
You're just spending a lot of money
to get places. A lot of your own money to get places for equipment, to get to games, you know, all the things that other federations or forget other federations, all the things that these men, that the men are compensated for or provided for, like Argentina, Brazil. Can you imagine the men having to pay for their own equipment or, you know,
pay to get,
do their own laundry and all of that? No, it'd be totally unheard. Yeah. It's totally unheard of.
In a lot of the cases, they use the men's jerseys, actually.
Right.
So, yeah, it's unbelievable. There's another story that I really want to talk about, but we don't really have time to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But if you guys, you know, are interested in this topic, you should check out Vero Boquete and the Spanish national team.
Mm-hmm.
She just, like, led this fight at the latest World Cup, where they had, like, a letter that was released during the World Cup and was, like, you know, I guess I want to say scandalous in Spain because, like, a lot of people were not exposed to this. Like, a lot of people didn't know that, you know, the women's national team, like how much money they received for per diem and all that, like the conditions they were working in, sleeping, whatever, just at the hotel, like the fact that they arrived at the World Cup in Canada like 3 days before the competition, like a lot of the, you know, friendly games that were meant to prepare the competition were just like canceled without notice. You know, they had a coach who had been there for like 27 years, you know, like just sitting, you know, living fat, you know, as part of like the old boys club, you know, friend of the federation's president, like, oh, okay, I'll give you this position, you can keep it for as long as you want, just like some of these African presidents, right? And so yeah, they did like tremendous work there. She was not selected after, so that was like, I guess, the price that she had to pay. But if you guys have time, you should listen to that. It's a podcast called We Came to Win. It was last summer, like right before the World Cup. And yeah, the episode is called something about Vero Boquete or something like that. Just look it up. It's really interesting. To close out this chapter, I would just want to say that in May of this year, the UEFA like launched this Women's Soccer Development Strategy initiative, which is actually the first one released ever. So I think their goal is to like double the amount of, you know, women and girls playing soccer in Europe, because it's the UEFA, mm-hmm. by 2024. So the initiative, I think, recognizes the need for support, financial backing, programs, the involvement, and also the positions of women in soccer, right? Like, not just like the playing staff, but also, like, you know, the executives and all that. So that's another thing to mention. And I guess we can close out this episode by talking about the discrimination of women, but this time within men's football.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously, like, there's a lot of aspects, coaching, refereeing, whatever, positions of power. I know that in 2014, there's this Portuguese coach named Hélène Costa. So she became the first woman to lead a French, you know, professional men's team.
Mm-hmm.
She was in Ligue 2. I think the name of the team was Clermont-Ferrand. So she was hired, and then she was hired in the summer, and then a couple of, like, just in the summer, or at least like before the season had started, period, she resigned because she said that, you know, she was, there was a level of amateurism that she could not tolerate, or that any coach wouldn't tolerate in the world, because, mm-hmm. you know, she was like sidelined, by like the sporting director, like signing players without her her input, or like like scheduling friendly games without her say so, like nothing at all.
Nothing that you would ever do to a man.
To a man, yeah,
you
exactly.
You would never
do
that to
like
a man.
We know that, you know, we're talking about like these new systems now, like in the continental Europe, as far as like how you structure the club, that like the manager is not here to stay anymore. They're here for like 2-3 years. You replace them, but you keep like a core. So you have like the sporting director who's at the top of all that, and like, you know, manages things. But still, like, it wouldn't be done to a Mourinho or a Pep Guardiola or a Conte,
never,
for sure. Or just anybody,
right?
Like, you can't. So my feeling, what is it, we spoke a little bit about this. Your feeling is that this was like a publicity stunt, I guess?
I absolutely see this as a publicity stunt, and a publicity stunt in word, but not in deed. So we're going to hire this woman. Mm. We're going to create this buzz and get people talking about it and maybe coming out to check it out. Mm. But we're not actually going to give this woman any real power. We're really not going to let her do the job that she was hired to do. Mm. And in all honesty, who wants to do that?
Yeah.
Right? Like, who wants a job, like a dream job, and then you get into the job and they basically are like, we just kind of want you to sit here and look pretty.
And be the face of the,
We don't want you to, like, do anything that you were led to believe that you would be able to do.
Yeah. I don't know if she published some of those emails, but I know that she was, like, trying to get to them, and they were like, like, you're tiring me with your emails. Like, you're just here for publicity. Like, we're going to, you know, which is crazy to even, like, just put that in writing, even though that's, like, what's going on.
Right.
And so right after she resigned, because she did resign, she was not sacked, the same team hired like another female coach. Mm-hmm. Her name is Corinne Diacre, and she's the current French women's national team, national team's coach. So, you know, a lot of people are like, they're really buying into this publicity thing, because it's like, all right, like, it'll really look bad on them if they, you know, this woman resigned for these reasons, that are so stereotypical.
Right.
And then, you know, like, she ends up leaving before even, like, training, like, one game, like, overseeing one game, period. And then now you're gonna, you know, like, it just looks bad on you.
Right.
Like, you have all this positive buzz that was going on because everybody was writing about you, like, a, you know, a nothing club in French League 2 division, not even League 1. So, you know, there's a feeling that you had to, like, appoint another female woman.
Right. I mean, and they absolutely had to in order to save face.
Yeah.
But I hope
and right
that
or wrong, that was good.
Right.
Right. As long as they had the good intention.
And I hope that they didn't treat this next coach
way
that they
treated
the previous one.
I know she stayed there
one.
For 3 years.
Okay.
And, you know, we can speak about all the, I guess, the, how do we call it? Like, the cultural barriers of, like, you know, just, like, you know, a dressing room of men, like, you know, being there and, like, their leader being a female in, you know, in soccer specifically. We can talk about these things and, you know, as bad as they are, the truth is, like, they're there. Like, many men don't see them, like, listening to like a female figure for like, oh, like, you know, when the striker goes here, you do this and that. And like, you know, they just look at her like ridiculous, right?
Right.
Which is insane. And it's like, this is something that like it's definitely going to be like a work in progress, right? Like it's not something that can happen.
But this is why it's so important that like when you're having conversations, like I definitely appreciate you because we talk soccer and you didn't laugh at anything I said. You didn't scoff at anything I said. You know, it was really refreshing.
Right.
Because that happens to me a lot, you know. And when you can have, I feel like when you can have those conversations, those everyday conversations, you know, you have them, little children can have them, you grow up and you're respecting each other's opinions and it translates into, well, if I have a woman coach, I know that she knows what she's talking about. And, you know, and I can just do what I need to do.
Yeah. I mean, even in the women's game, I think, 24 teams were there, 15 were managed by men, and just 9 were managed by women.
Right.
So even in the women's football, you know, the men are still there.
Yeah.
I mean, Corinne Diacre, she ended up staying at this club for 3 years, you know, just before joining the French national team. So I'm not really sure, like, what happened there as far as, like, how she was treated and all that.
Right.
But I didn't really see anything negative when I was looking for this. So my guess was, you know, it was just, like, a normal stint. Refereeing, you know, before we finish right now. So as far as like the Premier League or like La Liga in Spain,
Bundesliga.
Serie A in Italy, like no female referee has, you know, and when we say no female referees, like has officiated a game, we were talking about like the domestic league, so it would be the Serie A, the Liga, or the Premier League, right? Because we know that in England, for example, like, you know, I can mention names like Amy Stearns or something like that.
Okay.
There's also Cian Macielis. Her, I remember actually perfectly because I saw her like live.
Right.
But yeah, like women have refereed like, you know, FA Cup games or just like lower division games like the Championship, League One, League Two, and all that, but never in the Premier League.
Right.
And that is yet to happen, right?
And we need to make that happen.
We need to make that happen, yeah. Because right now, like, there's just two female figures who have actually officiated in Bundesliga and in Ligue 1. Bundesliga was the first one in 2017. What's her name? Bibiana Stenhouse. I just had a little fun there pronouncing the name. But yeah, so she was the first female, like, officiating a game in you know, Europe's top 5 leagues. And you know, she's actually she's a part-time police officer. If you see like her build, like, she's actually don't fuck with her. You can see that she's a police officer,
right?
And yeah, she had been involved in soccer like a long time ago, actually. Like, you know, in 99, I think she joined the German Soccer Federation to, like, you know, officiate a couple of like women games and all that. And then she became a FIFA referee in 2015.
Right.
2005, sorry. So that was over a decade ago as well. And then 2 years later, she started refereeing in the not the Bundesliga, but just like the lower division.
Right.
Not the top tier. And yeah, you know, since then she's been at the World Cup, she's been at Euro Games, she's officiated like women Champions League finals and all that. And then the second case I have is Stéphanie Frappard, who's a French woman. She's just 35, I think, and she refereed a game in Ligue 1 this year. So it's the first time that it's happening, and it was between Amiens and Strasbourg, I think. So she's been in Ligue 2 for like a long time, since 2014, just like, you know, randomly refereeing and all that. But that was the first step of her actually being the guy. And, you know, from what I heard of the referee body, whatever, that there's a plan for, like, more women like her, you know, to, like, just come on and, you know, because they have, like, all these, like, tests or whatever, like, standards that you have to, like, live up to, and they want them to be the same for the men and the women, which is not a good thing. So, I mean, I think that, you know, it's just a matter of time, right?
It's a matter of time and a matter of women expressing interest. I mean, I'm sure that there are. And I look forward to seeing more women refereeing games. I would love to see, you know, them more in the center.
Yeah.
And, you know, as the center ref.
Yeah, that's the thing that I forgot to mention. Like, a lot of the, you know, the women that I mentioned, like Cian Macielis, for example, in the Premier League, she's been on the line.
Yeah,
she's been like the lineswoman a lot of time. And the same thing with the Serie A, actually, but not like in the center, like you say, in the actual center. Yeah, very true.
Yep.
Just a matter of time. And then last point, positions of power, because this is another important one where we don't really see. I mean, so when I was working on this podcast, the first person I thought about was the Chelsea CEO, Marina Granovskaya, I think her name is.
Okay.
She's basically like Abramovich's like right-hand woman, right? Like she... This is a person who's been with him for like decades, like working in like a lot of his ventures.
Right, right.
And
she like handles like the day-to-day stuff,
she,
right?
Like she runs the club, right? And you know, we've been also like hearing reports in the last couple of years that Roman Abramovich is not really interested in soccer anymore. Like we already know that he's not persona grata in the UK. Like he can't work in the UK. He can't be there for like footballing matters or just like work period. Because of like the sanctions, you know, with the Russians,
with the Russians,
and all
that.
And he's also obviously like very close to the Kremlin, so he's not really
welcome
there. So she's her his representative effectively. She runs the club. She does everything. She's the CEO. And from what I read, she was she had been appointed to like the Chelsea like board of directors in 2013. But actually, since 2010, she had been like Roman Abramovich's like representative, like I said, and you know, she's been like acting on in his behalf, like in board meetings, like transfer meetings, and all that.
Right.
Just because you know whatever. And you know, she's now the CEO. I think for a couple of years now, since 2014 or something like that. And you know, she's had like you see her. She's actually very visible as well because like every time they sign players, she's the one who you know like when you get the customary like. Shake hands picture with the contract, whatever.
Right, that's her.
Like, she's always there.
Okay.
She travels with the team and all that. So she's done, you know, like, astute financial decisions, you know, that help make the club, that help the club, sorry, make, like, high-level purchases, you know, like, below market value while selling players, like, above market value. You know, they had the Diego Costas and all that we talk about. I mean, just, like, a lot of players, right? And she's also like one of the pioneers behind Chelsea's unique approach to youth soccer. You know, like we know, we always make fun of Chelsea with the fact that they like loan these like million players and then they have like nobody in the academy.
In their own,
Although they have like a great academy, actually.
Right.
But apparently it's like a financial success. They make like $9 million a year off of this system. So yeah. And the last one I can think of is the Fatma Samoura.
Yes.
Who's the FIFA Secretary General,
which is amazing. That's one of the top positions that you can have. It's nice to have a woman in that position, especially
from Senegal.
Especially since you know we are looking for changes in the women's game. So you really can't have those changes if women aren't invited to the table. So I think it's exciting. I hope that we'll see more women in roles like that. And
Because I mean, like this is nice, like what we're doing right now. But you know, we can't forget the fact that the most important aspect is that, like, girls, women, whatever, they're actually encouraged to like take up soccer at a young age, because that's what happens. You know, it's not like you're gonna take it up at 20 years old or anything like that.
Right.
So, like, these things have to be normalized. And, you know, like there has to be like a whole shift. In like a lot of the culture. And I think that it's just gonna be a matter of time. I mean, right now it's definitely becoming more and more mainstream. You know, people like they're making a lot more money. They're a lot more visible. They have like a lot more endorsements and all that. And you know, there's definitely money to be made. I think that's like the primary motivating factor for the money people. So but exciting times
thank you, I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. This was
I mean, you've been a great colleague, a great friend. You know, I can only wish you luck in like your future.
Thank you so much.
Your move to LA and all that with your family.
Well, if you're ever in LA, definitely, you know, look me up. We'll go to a game.
I will definitely swing by.
One or the other. I'm an old school LA Galaxy fan, so I have to stick with them. But I hear LAFC is making some, you know, making some moves out there. So definitely would like to check them out too.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Thank you for coming.
No problem. Thanks for having me.